that it might be helpful to you if I would say something about myself to give you some indication of what my life has been about for the last 35 years. This may enable you to understand something about what I'm going to say and why I'm saying what I'm saying, and why I believe that what I'm saying is important to be said. Will and I grew up in the same town at the same time. Town situated at the southernmost part of Alabama, the Gulf of Mexico. Town called Mobile, Alabama, that had had a long history of what white folks call good race relations. There had not been any turmoil, so to speak, in the town. And as a matter of fact, none has occurred there yet. I suppose partially because it had prided itself on its strong, quote, black bourgeoisie, unquote. For most of my life, I belong, as my father is a clergyman in the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, belong to that clan, I suppose we call it. And we lived in somewhat of an insular surrounding. And made our parents went to extreme ends to protect our souls and beings from white folks' rape. My father used to drive me to school 4 miles every day to keep me from riding on the back of a bus. My wife and I have been married 15 years, and one of the banes of her existence is that she has not in those 15 years been able to get me to appreciate going to movies. Because at an early age, my father made it very clear to me that it was idiocy for any man to pay to be segregated. And the only movies that were available for us were those that we would have to sit in what we call the buzzard's room. Therefore, movies have somewhat of a disdain in my existence. I went to college in North Carolina, a college that was founded by the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. There I majored in mathematics. From there I went to Hood Theological Seminary. From there I went to several other kinds of jobs, from pastoring churches to the editorship of Renewal Magazine. I suppose that's enough about that. I think it would be good to end with this quotation from W.E.B. Du Bois, which I have attempted to reconstruct in my own mind. May have some minor errors, but the sense is there. You can find it on the first page of his Souls of Black Folks. Between me and the other world, there's always an unasked question. Unasked by some through feelings of delicacy. By others, by not knowing how rightly to frame it. But they all approach me in a half-hesitant sort of way, and eye me curiously. And they say, I know a good colored man in my town. Or I fought at Mechanicsville. At these I simply smile, or reduce my boiling to a simmer. To the real question of how does it feel to be a black man, I seldom answer a word. I thought and meditated upon that after being in Holden Village for 2 days. And it became very clear to me after the experiences that I have encountered here of what W.E.B. Du Bois was saying when he says that they approach me in a half-hesitant sort of way. But what they really want to know is, how does it feel to be a black man? And I want to establish and affirm that W.E.B. Du Bois' position is correct. I cannot, will not entertain that question. And when you see me, I will simply reduce my boiling to a simmer. I will not smile about it. What I'm to talk to you about tonight is Caucasus and Caucasians. My first point will be this. The black church and white Christianity stand in stark contradistinction to each other. And that is to say, without any hesitation, without any fears of repudiation, that the two bear little or no resemblance to each other. And it is only in corruption of the black church, when it has become corrupt, that it bears any resemblance to the white church in any shape, form, or fashion. And I prefer to call the white church the white American religious establishment. And throughout the course of this discussion, that's what it will be referred to, sometimes as the American white and religious establishment, and sometimes as just the establishment. In the 18th century, while white Christians subjected black folks to the most inhuman form of chattel slavery that the world has ever known, and when the white religious establishment was debating the humanity of black folks, that is, they were trying to decide in their councils whether or not black folks were indeed human. And it took the form that there was a great debate about whether or not we can baptize black folks, and whether or not if we baptize them, whether or not we are affirming their humanity and the possibility of their salvation. That debate went on. One old white woman said that if you baptize my nigger, you might as well baptize my dog. They finally solved the issue by saying that baptism and the coming of the Christ into a man's life really did not make any difference. It leaves him in the state that it found him in. Therefore, if he were a slave, then he could not automatically become free because he had been baptized. While that debate was going on, Richard Allen and Absalom Jones arrived at the St. George Methodist Street Church, St. George Methodist Church in Philadelphia, for the morning worship service a bit later than usual. And when they arrived, the prayer was being offered. And as they had perceived themselves as good Methodists, that is, that Methodists always assume an attitude of prayer by kneeling, or seated, bowed in their places, but never standing. And after discovering that the prayer was going on, fell upon their knees. Where they were accosted by an usher who informed them that, you know, you can't stop here. Your place is up in the balcony. And they said, well, why don't you just allow us to wait until the prayer has been concluded. Whereupon the white usher snatched them apart from their knees. And they walked out of that church. And Richard Allen and Absalom Jones formed the Free African Society, which became the first independent religious, independent black organization in this country. And a little later, in New York City, James Varick and Peter Williams petitioned the Board of Stewards of the John Street Methodist Church and said there is something missing from our experiences here in a supposed and contrived communal experience and worship with you. And so what we would really like to do is to see about pulling ourselves together and worshiping ourselves as black folks. Because there's something unique about the community that we represent. There's something different, the ethos, the consciousness is different. We represent the issues, the questions that we raise are not the questions that white folks raise. And so the sermons that we hear, they don't have very much meaning to us and for us. They don't grab us. A reasonable request. That request was denied. So they formed the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. And Richard Allen and Absalom Jones. Rich Allen became the founder of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And what we see here is affirmation that the concerns expressed in the innermost beings of black folks, which can really be reduced and evolve around two words, and that is survival and liberation, can never be the issues and the concerns, at least, it has never been demonstrated to be so, of the white community. In the first instance, as has been demonstrated, the American white religious establishment is more concerned with the maintenance of American free enterprise system and so-called democracy than it is with the children of Israel or the New Testament Christ. And the fact is, all one needs do is to read history and understand that no one could subject a people whom they considered to be human beings to the kind of slavery that was an inhuman form of slavery that black folks were subjected to unless there were a philosophical base for such slavery. And the church provided that rationale. Not only that, it can be seen clearly all throughout Western theologizing. How everything that the church does in this country, not the church, I beg your pardon, the religious establishment, what it does in this society is simply to be a purveyor and protector of the society's norms and its values. It is quite interesting that it was not until the Supreme Court decided that segregation was illegal that the church, the religious establishment, then found out that it was sinful. And all one needs to do is follow the fact that, where do you, for example, think that we get our inclination toward the fact that every man's got to work for his living? Or that all men are created equal? You see, all men are created equal is a rationalization for capitalism. For it says that I need not have any concern for you or if you are impoverished, because the assumption is that I began where you began. And that if I do not succeed, it's my fault. It's because of my slothfulness. I'm lazy, or I have committed some kind of offense against the holy gods out there. And I'm being punished. Or look at Thanksgiving. Have you ever thought in your mind what the hell you're celebrating when you celebrate Thanksgiving? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about what that means? A celebration of genocide of a whole race of people from whom you stole these lands. Then said it was the will of God that you should do so. Same way in which the missionary movement says that we're going to go across the waters to civilize the heathen. We came over here and put Indians on reservation. Well, put them in concentration camps that we call reservations. Call it the will of God. And on the other hand, while you are developing free enterprise and capitalism, black folks are talking about their survival, their liberation. And whereas free enterprise serves to destroy community, you know, I've heard a whole lot of questions floating around in the air that raise about why it is that white folks don't have no community with each other. Why we don't have the same kind of thing that black folks. Well, all you have to do is look at capitalism and understand that capitalism's premise is that I must do it to you before you do it to me. Not only that, I must do it better to you. Rugged individualism. My second point is this, simply this, that the situation has not appreciably changed since the 18th century. In 1960s, black churchmen who belonged to predominantly white denominations, which comprised the white American religious establishment, had forced upon them a kind of consciousness that made them understand that integration simply meant accommodation, assimilation, and acculturation. In short, what integration meant was black death. Or again, what integration meant or means is that simply every black man has the right and opportunity to become a white one. And it was from the pressure of seeing that and confronting those denominations almost incessantly that they discovered that it was impossible, ultimately and unalterably impossible, for white folks to respond to black demands and to the black consciousness. Therefore, they went out and formed themselves what they call black caucuses, or if you understand that you Lutherans are very hot on this language business, maybe we ought to call it black cauci. But they formed. And my point is that the situation has not changed appreciably since James Varick and Richard Allen had to leave the Methodist Church. That the issues that confront the cauci or the caucuses are not unlike the issues that confronted Richard Allen and James Varick. So what my point is that Caucasians, nor have caucuses, changed in these nearly 200 years. What were they asking? What they really asked, since they discovered that integration meant black death, what they really wanted to ask, who will save us from the body of this death? Suddenly the answer came reverberating down from the ages, from Nat Turner and Didmark Vesey, and from Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth, the answer came, it is the black Christ. And only the black Christ that can save us from the body of this death. For it is he who is with the oppressed of the land, with the powerless and the exploited. It is he who is with those who are rejected and despised. He strives with them for their liberation. And where is the black Christ to be found? Only in the black church. So they said, then we must celebrate. The black church and the black Christ. And we look for our answer not in Frederick Schleiermacher or Martin Luther. We look for our answer in Frederick Douglass and Henry Highland Garnett, David Walker. We look for our answer in the songs that our fathers sang on the plantations that made them not have an identity crisis because they knew who the hell they were. Have no problems with that. And all one needs to do is just read a few spirituals and you'll be quick to understand that black folks didn't have no problems about who they were. That answer was that we are children of God and God strives with us. And indeed our liberation is assured. No question about that. Not even debatable. No one needs to even raise the question, if or when. But that is a certainty. And it was out of that, those caucuses, came the confrontation with Caucasian. And what the Caucasus confronted Caucasians with was the black Christ. My third point, or my second A point, would be to say that there's literally no difference in the issues. What are those issues? One, and there are a long list, and I would not presume to even try to cover a fraction of them this evening. But generally, we'd say the failure of that establishment to see liberation as the central core of the gospel. Can't do that. I mean, if you hold somebody in shackles and chains, and you call yourself a Christian, you can't say that liberation is the central core of the gospel. I mean, that's a contradiction that the human mind can't live with. You can't live with that contradiction. Because the first thing you want to tell me that you ain't no oppressor. And you didn't hold nobody in chains. And that you should not share in that guilt. I'll leave that question for somebody else to raise. I'll speak to that later. Second thing is the failure of the religious establishment to take black folks seriously. Y'all heard a man here this afternoon say, well, look, I don't want to know what the hell you feel, but I want to know how your mind functions. Now, what kind of shit is that? I mean, I don't want to know nothing about you. I just want to know how your mind functions. Now the fact is, how in the world can you separate the way my mind functions from what I feel? You see, the problem is that there's a kind of idiocy going around that infects white folks mainly. And that idiocy is that everything that is not logical or rational ain't got no meaning. You know? Let me give you an illustration of that. They will not allow for the fact that emotion, well, rationality and logicality only interpret reality, right? They ain't reality itself. I mean, just because you logically define something and interpret a reality, you rationally define that doesn't make that thing reality ipso facto. That is just an interpretation of that reality. And I submit that emotions are also equal interpreters of reality. They do not themselves presume to be reality, but they interpret reality. Well, you know, one way of trying to explain that is that to say that white folks just discovered sex last year. No, maybe 2 weeks ago. Or maybe when Masters and Johnson published that thing, or Kinsey published his. But what folks were after was trying to logify and rationalize that which cannot be done. And you have to pardon this reference, but the only way that you can logify and rationalize human sexuality and the sex act itself is to screw it up. And if all you have to do is read those reports, you will discover that. So y'all don't like for folks to get emotional. So we had to leave y'all on that account. Somebody talked about somebody hollering yesterday. I'm sorry about that. Third point is the lack of a sense of community, any kind of prevailing ethos that holds people together. Well, you've got to have that. The church is a community. It has a particular ethos about which people gather. And we say that that legitimate ethos is around the liberation of the oppressed. I'd like to know what you say it is. Bet you get 1,000 answers. That's why you can't have no community. I already talked about the spirit of capitalism. My final point is this. That the primary reality for black folks is that they are black. And if they happen to be Lutheran, Methodist, AME, Zion, Baptist, that's way down the line. We know that. Primary reality, they black. That's an inescapable reality. I mean, I walked on Holden Village the other day. Everybody knew who I was. I bet they didn't know who you were. I mean, people came up telling me who I am. And we've been expecting you people. And therefore, if being black is a primary reality and we happen to be Christian and Christianity is a part of our tradition, then Christianity is unalterably, indisputably political, social and economic. No escaping that fact, because that is our reality. And black is a political world. That's why white folks don't like it. They prefer to call us colored, Negro, nigger, anything about black, except black, because black has a kind of potent political reality. Folks don't want to deal with that. Always tell me, wouldn't you prefer that I just refer to you as, you know, Negro is such a nice word. But you y'all made such a hell out of black word, the word black, that you even uncomfortable with. You know, I had planned to say something about the National Committee of Black Churches. But I already feel like I don't talk too long. Maybe let me say one, two things about that. National Committee of Black Churchmen is really just a, how many of you ever heard of that? Y'all live in a ghetto. I don't know wherever it is. It is a ghetto. Two people in the whole place heard of National Committee of Black Church. The National Committee of Black Churchmen formed in 1966, shortly after Stokely Carmichael on the road to through Mississippi with the Meredith March. You ever heard of Meredith March? Do you know who he is? James Meredith? Ever heard of him? Okay. On the Meredith March, you know, you know who Stokely Carmichael is, I don't need to ask that question. Issued a kind of summons for black power. Start talking, chanting about what we want is black power. Next day, the New York Times had an editorial that black power means black death. President Johnson got on the radio and television talking about what we don't need is black power. What we want, we don't want white power, we don't want black power. What we want is American democratic power. And Hubert Humphrey was running around the country talking about, I'm afraid that this new call for black power will divide the nation. And it seemed, and a few black churchmen in New York City decided that we ought to put an end to that kind of idiocy. And we printed a full-page ad in the New York Times in July of 1966 that dealt with the issues of power and Christian ethics from a black perspective. And because of the response to that kind of publication, we formed an organization the next year called the National Committee of Black Churchmen that took seriously that takes seriously the fact that the church, the real church, the black church, has to be political, economic, and social. And that organization now has a fairly large size membership that continues to confront in a caucus way Caucasians. I think I'll end here, and I'm sure that I have not said enough about the National Committee, but perhaps some other time. I invite your questions.